Hi there, it's Michael Blyden, and this is episode 2 of The Cold Bath. I started this episode trying to get Mr. Anonymous back on track, talking about his life as a political consultant in New York City politics, and of course, as before, he veers way off track. Anyway, this is at least where we start.
The first real campaign was for Norman Mailer. Oh, no, actually, there were two before that. One was a judge who was now gone to his reward. And
just to clarify for people, yeah. Judges get elected. I honestly think people, I didn't know that right. Before I started talking.
There are some states where the governor appoints them all. There are some states where the parties anoint them. That is to say, they are the Democratic and Republican nominees. And if there's a liberal and conservative party, they go with all four. Some states say you can only have three nominations. Look, given the system we use to select them, the judges are marvelous. They're better than we had any right to hope for. I don't want to comment on people because that's already done in the masked media, often mispronounced as the mass media. But that's done by the masked media generally. What I'd like to do is be those people just for a few moments so that you can see the world as they see them. Hi, I'm Mike Nafon, and here is my story. Mike is a lawyer of, ordinary talent, and he is in Durham, North Carolina. He is an equal assistant DA, co-equal with this gal, Frieda Black. They work in the same office. The district attorney leaves, and Mike is temporarily appointed to be the district attorney of Durham, North Carolina. Now, he has to run in a Democratic primary against Frieda Black in just a few weeks. But she's going to win because the newness of having a woman anything will be attractive not to young women, but to women 60, 70, and 80 who vote and who remember when women couldn't get themselves arrested unless their husband had been congressman and died, then they could follow him. But women getting to high office on their own hook, that is quite new. I predate it. And regardless of what you think now, I am younger than Abraham Lincoln. Now, Mike's problem is simple, and I want you to think of Mike as just an ordinary federal human being like you. He has to defeat Frieda Black in the Democratic primary, which is coming up on him like a runaway train. And this case falls into his lap. This young woman comes forward and says, I was raped by the football team or the lacrosse team or the baseball team. Doesn't matter. And
even though we know it was the lacrosse team.
For this purpose, it was the lacrosse team. But it doesn't matter. Who are the people who are being accused? They are the Scottsboro boys of today. Now, you can go onto Google and find out who the Scottsboro boys were. These people are the upper middle class, white Scottsboro boys. They're people wrongly accused of rape. Now, as a guy who, when he was alive, used to like to fuck around, rape is the worst possible crime where the victim survives. Even with kidnapping, you say, if they were kidnapped as small children, as W.S. Gilbert and Sullivan, he was kidnapped when he was a year old. That's why when you see the Pirates of Penzance or anything, there are always these ridiculous, these Keystone Cops, these nutty people, because this is how he saw the world from the time of age one when he was kidnapped. We don't have to go into the music versus the libretto, or that Sullivan was a much greater talent than Gilbert. We don't need to talk about this. Just the fact that he was kidnapped when he was a year old. But
rape
is the most serious crime where the victim survived, because that woman and her friends and her mother and her sisters will never be the same again. So it is the most serious charge to raise. except...
That woman, you mean the rape victim. You don't mean that woman in the Durham case. You mean the woman who is raped.
The actual rape victim. And unlike the television drama, like Law & Order, where you can see who did it, it unfolds in the course of the one-hour drama. We don't know who did it in real life. The district attorneys don't know who did it. The police do not know who did it. They try to find out, but they are under a great deal of pressure. Now, among the horrible pressures they are under is political.
Again, now you're talking again now specifically about the Durham case.
Specifically about the Durham case. Mike has to beat Freda Black in the primary. This is what Hitchcock calls the MacGuffin. It is that thing which is of no interest to you, the audience, but which motivates the characters in the play. Many of you who have seen the movie Psycho don't even know about the $60,000. It is of no interest to you, but that's what starts her off on the road to Bates Motel. She's running because she's stolen this money. And please, if it was only $50,000, please don't email us and call us a liar for $10,000. That's not the point. The MacGuffin in this case is the Democratic primary. Mike Nifong, who is a white male, needs to beat Freda Black, who is a black female. And she's a black female who the audience will have no trouble recognizing because her name is Black. And his name, lucky for him, is not Mike White. But now, he has to beat her. So he hears of this woman who is bringing charges that she was raped by the sports team. And it's by the sports team in the big university, the very liberal university, the very wealthy university, who is the 8,000-pound gorilla in their community. So it's perfect from Mike's point of view.
Now, do you think at this point there's someone whispering in his ear saying, hey, you know, this is...
You mean then?
Yeah.
In the beginning?
Yeah. Or do you think he takes it upon himself? And again, let's just say this is all your, you know, this is your interpretation of events. This is how you see the world. We are speculating. Neither of us know what the real deal is. Neither of us have talked to any of the people involved.
Right.
But, you know, this story tells so much about the way that you perceive politics. Let me ask a very cynical question. If you had been there, let's say he'd started his campaign. His campaign was a couple weeks away, and you're working for him, mm-hmm. and this whole thing happens. What would you have advised him?
In private?
Yeah.
Mike, listen, this is politics. There's no reason you shouldn't spread racial and sexual fears for money. I mean, this is a very raw game. Politics ain't beanbag. Finley Peter Dunne said that 100 years ago. You should read his books. They're all remainder. They'll cost you a dollar.
Well, let's just stop. This is a feature of this podcast. There's going to be a recommended reading list. You have now just hit upon the first one. The title of the book is
Find Any of Them by Finley Peter Dunne. He was a Chicago newspaper man back when they had newspaper men, and it was 100 years ago. And so the books in hardcover should cost you $3.
Right.
Okay.
Politics ain't beanbag. So you're in private advising Mike Nifong.
Right. I'd say there's no reason you should not be playing with dynamite. There's no reason you should not be spreading racial and sexual fears to beat Freda Black in the primary. All's fair in love and war. However, as a human being, Mike, you don't want to be a, what's the word I'm looking for? Monster. You don't want to actually spread racial and sexual fears to win the stupid Democratic primary in Durham, North Carolina. If you're going to spread racial and sexual fears for a living, it should be a much bigger payoff than this. I mean, you're spreading real terror in people's real hearts. For what? For what? To be district attorney in Durham, North Carolina? Mike, give me a fucking break. Come on, Mike. At least wind up being president, general secretary of the United Nations. You know, dictator, president for life. I mean, if you're going to go into the hearts and souls of these helpless people in Durham, North Carolina, who, because you are an elected official and the district attorney, they're going to believe you when you say X did Y to Z, you should be right. You shouldn't hold 71 impromptu press conferences every time, making these kids, who we now know, they weren't not just not guilty. OJ was not guilty. They didn't do it. They had nothing to do with it. And you knew that going in. But your genius, and I have to give you this, your genius is you never permitted yourself to interview her. So that no judge...
He never interviewed her.
No. He would say hi to her in the hall.
Now, what's his reasoning? So that he has some sort of plausible deniability?
Exactly. Exactly. He's brilliant. Whatever he is a pro at his job. He knows that some judge or somebody like me who works for some governor is going to get a hold of him and say, what are you out of your fucking mind? You're spreading racial fear to win an election? You're spreading the fears of every woman who is afraid of actually being raped. You're spreading that fear to win an election. What kind of monster are you? By the way, the only justice this man will ever get is if people stop using the word nefarious. And when they would normally use the word nefarious, they from now on use the word nefong and say, that's terribly nefong. And then they can apologize. You know, they can send out an internet message to all the people actually named Nefong. We're sorry. Like Quisling a generation or two ago.
Is this the most cynical thing you've seen in a campaign?
No.
What takes the cake for you? What out Nefong's Nefong?
I don't want to say now because although it is called the cold bath, it shouldn't be a bath full of ice water.
Let's go back to where you are now. You said there's a couple campaigns before Norman Mailer. You worked for Norman Mailer. Mm-hmm. Gloria Steinem was on hand. She apparently very hot.
I really did, because I was, I'm just one or two years younger than Gloria, that I thought she was Norman's wife. Because she's a foot taller than Norman, but she managed to look up at him. Try that. Adoringly. In those days, you know, this is before the flood, if someone in some political meeting hall was looking up at you adoringly, generally, that was the role played by your ever-loving wife. I don't want to mention any names, but there are some people who ran for high office, and their wives did not campaign with them. And when people I know would say, why aren't you campaigning with your husband? They would say something like, oh, please, Howard's crazy. But, or whatever, or John's crazy, or Billy's crazy. But certain people are so unlike their public image, like Al Sharpton, example, an extremely nice person.
Yeah, I can't wait to talk about Sharpton, which is great. But I'm trying.
He's smart.
Yeah, you have a lot of respect for Al Sharpton.
No, I have the right amount of respect for him. Look, let me tell you this. Let me tell you what I should have done all my life. I should have started a civil rights organization for the highly intelligent poor. I'm not starting one now, and I don't invite any of you to join, but that's what I should have done. Just as others have the N-word, our N-word was the expression, if you're so smart, why aren't you rich? We wanted to drive that from the public culture. The concept was something that every highly intelligent person who was not born rich or who did not make substantial wealth has had to fight against their whole life. So when I see anybody who's very smart, anybody, doesn't matter, I have a certain, there's a family resemblance between Al Sharpton and me that is just on the smart thing.
Right, you think he's not rich now?
No comment.
It's funny, there's different types of no comments of yours, yeah. Some of which Some no comments mean I no comment to affirm what you're saying. Some mean no comment to deny. And then there's a whole other category of no comment, which I don't even know what.
Well, I simply don't know what his finances are. And like about people's sex lives, and this is a very reliable observation, I don't care. I don't care.
You don't care about sex life.
I don't care what others are doing. I only care who I want to fuck, not who you want to fuck. I don't care. And I don't care how others make their living unless they're, you know, Mike Nafon.
But you saying that you have a certain, you feel a, you know, you feel some sense of simpatico with Al Sharpton because of this sense that he was a smart underdog like yourself for a time? Am I getting it wrong?
When he was five, he was a slightly chubbier Michael Jackson running around the stage with a microphone and cable asking older black women, lady, why don't you give me some of your money so I could give it to Jesus? And then when his father died when he was 11, he had to do it professionally because his mother and his sisters insisted. So we're all victims of circumstance. But at a certain age, you realize that. And you look at Bill Clinton, George Bush, and you don't see the president. You see some poor, febrile human being like yourself. And you see this in everybody. You see it. It doesn't matter whether they're Jeffrey Dahmer or name some other serial killers. Who was the fellow in Chicago with the little boys under his floorboards? Wayne Gacy, yeah. Or who was the one in Florida? Ted Bundy. Or whether even John Kerry, even Al Gore, whose movie is called An Inconvenient Woman, How I Will Brush Hillary Aside for the Nomination.
So on some level, you're asserting, on some level, that Al Gore's movie was his run at unseating Hillary for the Democratic nomination in 2008.
That certainly is a part of what it is.
Another thing that you said to me once, which I've repeated a lot, is that every voter has one issue that will decide how they vote, logically or illogically. There's one core issue that will decide across the board how they
right.
vote. And I think it's true. And
right.
for me, it's environmental. It's all the environmental issues.
Let me just return for a moment to Mike Nafong. He knows that he has to beat Freda Black in the Democratic primary. So what can he do? Again, we're all victims of circumstance. He has to show the women and the black women and black men that he's more a champion of them than a black woman. And he's running against a black woman whose name is Black. You cannot make this stuff up. Look, I got into a thing with another equally intelligent, far younger man, someone that you would identify with if you knew them. And it was about some other thing during the recall when the governor was being replaced with Schwarzenegger.
Oh, and the California governor recall,
right.
Yeah.
And there were 31 previous recall efforts, but none of them succeeded till this one. But this one succeeded because it had two groups behind it, the Democrats and the Republicans. And when you run afoul of both of them, you lose. During the campaign, there was a political campaign message that did not seem to be. It seemed to be about something else, and I got into a contretemps with my friend. He thought that this statement in the recall election was absolutely sincere about something Schwarzenegger may or may not have done. And I said, it has nothing to...
It's about the Schwarzenegger groping?
No.
Do you not remember it, or you're not saying it?
No. I don't remember, but it wasn't that.
Okay.
But
so something, someone alleged that Schwarzenegger did something, may or may not have been true.
No, it wasn't may or may not have been true. It was a whole cloth generated political campaign piece for another one of the candidates. And what I was telling my friend, who hasn't spent his whole life in politics, is people like me, although I don't know who, make this stuff up, and they insert these little droplets of poison into the body politic, knowing that you will take them seriously. And that is how conspiracy works in our public culture. Now, are there conspiracies? Yes. Jack Kennedy did not commit suicide. It was not an ordinary automobile accident. I read the Warren Report, and here's what it says in brief. Lee Harvey Oswald, acting alone, threw a single stick of Wrigley's Spearmint chewing gum, with the wrapper still on, off the sixth floor of the Texas School Box Suppository Building, going up the president's ass and causing all those wounds in Connolly. That's what they said. And they said that because you have to say something outrageous, because if you said something sensible, it would cause more problems. But this was 43 years ago, and I don't tell myself, as I did when I was 13, 15, 25, 35, that they were wrong to say this bullshit. I did, but then at a certain point, and I'm sorry, I don't mean to say this is a threat, but this will happen to you. You will grow up, and you will say, oh my God, or oh my, you know, whatever, oh my post-God. I can't tell the truth. I cannot tell the citizens the truth. I don't even know exactly what it is, but I can't even speak out loud to them. I have to come up with a cover story. You will have something in your private life, in your sex life, in your financial life, that you'll say, we just simply can't say what happened. We have to say something plausible or something outrageous to divert attention. However, the problem is, if you do this more than once or twice, the citizens will begin to think that everything is a conspiracy. I have met very intelligent people, although the truth is most of them here in Holly Stupid, who believe that the CIA blew up the World Trade Center.
And I have not met many people who actually believe that.
I didn't say there were many. I have just met several who believe this, and they really believe it. Are they grasping at straws? I don't know. But they don't seem to be drooling. They don't seem to be gibbering idiots. They seem to be more or less intelligent people. And they say things like this, and then others pile on.
Basically, you're saying there's a psychology for accepting these conspiracies.
There's a psychology to call everything a conspiracy, where in fact practically nothing is. In the tension between stupidity and conspiracy, stupidity nearly always wins.
Let's end it on that.
Okay.
You're listening to The Cold Bath. Thanks for listening to episode 2. If you're thinking of running for political office, please tune in for episode 3. Mr. A is going to give the audience some free political advice.
You can do everything that you do now in your life. You can smoke a little dope. You can borrow money from rich friends. You can lend money to poor friends. You can get laid. You can do everything everybody else does, except never think out loud again.